So they cross the Jordan. Something pretty serious happens here. So there's a process here with crossing the Jordan. So first of all, there's no more pillar of fire and smoke.
Mm-hmm.
The pillars are gone because now no longer they're traveling the wilderness. So now what goes in front of them is the Ark. And the Ark is, later on we see the nations fear the Ark, fear it to death. Literally, they're scared of it. To a point where in the book of Judges it says, you've brought the God of Israel to my town to kill me. Okay, so the Ark, people start fearing the Ark, but it creates this misunderstanding. But what is the Ark? It's just a box of wood with gold and these cherubs and tops. People forget what it actually represents. Who does it represent? It's not the Ark itself. It is he who dwells through the Ark.
Sure. He who dwells between people, the cherub and the covenant within.
Exactly. So the Ark itself, there's a whole preparation. So he tells him to prepare for 3 days before. Now the preparation of 3 days before actually reminds us of the 3 days before we see the Torah on Mount Sinai. Mm-hmm. So there's this whole thing of 3 days. Numbers appear here and there a bit. They prepare for 3 days and they're preparing food. So when they cross, it will be ready because there's not going to be time to harvest. They're living in an area where it's under their control. They're moving now into hostile territory. Mm-hmm. So they're preparing food. And it tells them to prepare for 3 days. Now, the thing is, the Ark is going to walk in front of the camp. So it looks as if they're preparing. Maybe they're even cleansing themselves or cleaning themselves because they also go into battle.
Sure.
Now, if you look at Deuteronomy, it tells about unclean men in the battle camp. If they become unclean, they have to leave the camp and wash themselves. Specifically talks there about men who become unclean from natural causes, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so a bodily emission, right?
So maybe they're cleaning themselves because they're becoming a camp of war.
There's millions of them, right, literally. And so 3 days is enough time for them to be able to prepare sufficiently on numerous levels, I suppose.
Yes, and then they have the officers, the shotrim, which are the ones the supervisors go through the camp and say, okay, we're going to go. Now, he's warning them, when we're going to cross, the priests are going to take the Ark and they're going to cross at a certain point, and he mentions the point where they're going. They're going to be standing in front of a city called Adam, mm-hmm. and there's actually a town this very day, but it's very called Adam, but we're not talking about the same Adam. It's an area probably north of Jericho. They go in, and they're told you're going to have to keep something like 2,000 cubits, which is just underneath the kilometers, like 960 meters, something like almost a third of a mile or something like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they start crossing. But the parting here of the Jordan is way more intense. It's only the Jordan. I mean, if you've ever seen the Jordan, it's not a very big river.
The thing that struck me about this whole the crossing of the Jordan here, and I understand what you're saying. The
Red Sea, it's an ocean.
The Red Sea is a much more impressive body of water than the Jordan.
But on the other hand, the way it splits. Now, by the way, a splitting of the Jordan also happens in the Book of Kings, which mm-hmm. Elijah and Elisha happens
yes.
as well.
Yeah.
But what happens is there's several pointers here which are also very important in the text. It mentions that it's spring, it's the time of the harvest, which is very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
The river is overflowing. And now I actually went a while back and we went to the Jordan River and it was springtime and it was flowing with water. Last time it was almost like a little puddle of water.
Mm-hmm.
It was full of water this time. But think of it that now it has less water because we've been pumping out of it. Think of it what would happen, I don't know, thousands of years ago, it was probably wider and bigger. I mean, I remember as a child,
it might have been flowing much stronger. I mean, how far from the bank to the opposite bank do you think we're talking in meters? Or in, people in the States and feet?
So I'm going to say in meters because we use the metric system here in Israel. So today it's like 3 or 4 meters. It's nothing. 3, 4, maybe 5 meters.
Okay.
It could have been 10 meters then.
Sure.
I mean, you can see that the bank has reduced, but if you go outwards a bit more, you can kind of see where originally the water was. You can still see type of earth which is there, but it's been reducing for years already. And we had a very, very nice, good rainy year. So it's flowing very nicely now, and the water is a bit clean. It's very muddy. I mean, when I was there with Keith, I'm seeing these Christian pilgrims from, I don't know, from Eastern Europe, and they're all walking and dipping in this muddy, muddy water. I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
Close your mouth.
It's like, duck.
So it's obviously a miracle on a much smaller scale, and yet the repetition of this event carries on for a couple of chapters.
Yeah, but the thing is, I don't think it's actually small. I think something else happens here. The water stops in mid-flow and becomes a huge pillar. And there's a midrash that says that this pillar could be seen from a very, very long distance. Basically, God saying, I'm coming.
Yeah. So then, you know, that's interesting that you should say that, because I noticed the wording. It said, it didn't just say that the water would stop, it'd walk across on dry land. But in the English, it's, and I'm just looking for it now, but it says, I'm sure it says something to the effect of that the water will pile up. And I thought that's interesting.
Yeah, it says the water piles up to a ned. And actually, the word ned also appears in the Ned Nozlim appears also in the Song on the Sea. Mm-hmm. And what happens here, it dries up all the way to the Dead Sea, and all the water is flowing. We're talking massive quantities of water mm-hmm. are just piling up into this pillar. So it's like, whoop, it's up in the air. In the sea, it was like a strong wind, and you can experiment with it. It can actually sometimes help breaking the water. Here, the water just stops.
And starts to, okay, just, so I've got it. It's verse 13. And it says, and it shall come to pass as soon as the soles of the feet of the priests who bear the ark of the Lord of all the earth, shall rest in the waters of the Jordan, that the waters of the Jordan shall be cut off, and the waters that come downstream from upstream, and they shall stand as a heap. They shall stand as a heap. So it's fair to think that it just is increasingly piling up until it's visible from quite a distance. I also just want to let me just read verse 7 too, because I think this is significant in regards to again Deuteronomy 18 where we started. It says, verse 7, and the Lord said to Joshua, "This day I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. And you shall command the priests to bear the ark," and saying, and so on and so forth, and off they go.
And that's why I agreed with you, because there is a side here where he's supposed to be like Moses. There's actually an interesting midrash. It says that if it wasn't the fact that Moses sinned, he would have entered the land with them.
Mm-hmm.
So because Moses had to be replaced, he had to be replaced with someone almost like him.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, there's another midrash that says Moses is like the sun and Joshua is more like the moon. He's a reflection, but he's not literally like him. So there were different ways amongst rabbis how to approach the sure. Moses and Joshua. But Joshua was just a servant. He walked around with Moses all the time. You know, he was his right hand basically.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, and he was a faithful assistant.
He learned from Moses. He learned how to be a leader. He learned the ways of prophecy, and he learned the ways of being a prophetic king or something from Moses himself. When he speaks about Joshua, it says Na'ar lo yamush min ha'oil. So Na'ar in modern Hebrew usually means a young man, but Na'ar also means a servant. Lo yamish min ha'ohel, is it yamish or yamush? I think it's yamish.
Mm-hmm.
Min ha'ohel, he never removed himself from the tent. He was always there.
Sure.
He was always with Moses. He was always learning.
Mm.
So he was basically being groomed to be his succession.
And so they did cross over, and then we come to chapter 4, and we have these memorial stones. Now the obvious question is, are they there? Are they there today? Do we know anything about these? What's the story there?
So I thought of going on an expedition to look for them, and I don't think that we'll be able to find them now. Years ago as a child, I read this like, oh, they must be still out there. And I started reading up on this, and there had been attempts to look for it, and no one found anything.
Because it says, and these stones shall be for a memorial to the children of Israel forever. And so you think to yourself, you know, the first thing that crossed my mind when I was thinking about that, I thought, you know what, along the side of a river, you know, when water is involved, there's a lot of changing in the banks of the river. There's a lot of erosion. There's a lot of redirection of flow and all that sort of stuff. And it makes me wonder if one day water may uncover. Maybe they're buried. Maybe they're yet to be uncovered again one day. Who knows?
Yeah, again, they might be somewhere. I mean, they might be both exposed on the surface as well, and we just don't know where they are. I mean, sure. If we find one day this pile of rocks and there's 12 of them, okay, that's going to be a pretty good hint. But they have to be, you know, again, anyone can walk up and make a pile of rocks and then bury them and wait a couple of years and say, oh, look what I found.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, but yes, yeah, so they're supposed to be there, and they might still be somewhere in the water or somewhere on the ground itself, but we have not found anything of the sort, which is kind of disappointing, because it was a childhood dream to one day read about discovering the 12 rocks. It's never been found.
Yeah, I guess so. But I mean, there's not that much. I mean, they were anointed, but I mean, these days, I mean, how would you know? How would you know that that was the rock? I mean, you know, there's 12 rocks, exactly. Or perhaps. I mean, it seems like they were big enough for a man to carry, though I imagine them to be, you know, of significant weight.
Yeah, they wouldn't carry out pebbles. You know?
No. There you go. There's 12 of those. So they were obviously, you know, it's a memorial, but we don't know where they are today. But in any case, they do cross over, and there is a big deal made about these memorial stones, and there is, again, some repetition in regards to those. But
by the way, there's two piles. I actually mentioned two piles of stones.
Oh, is it? Because I assumed
there's one
in
the river. No, it looks as if there's one in the river next to the feet of the priests,
uh-huh.
And there's another one on the other side.
Oh, really?
Two parallel piles.
I didn't pick
that
up.
That's what it looks like.
Okay, because I thought it was just being repetitive. I thought we were talking about the same piles. But I can see what you're saying.
So it says here that they take them to the place of they're going to sleep. And then in verse 9 it says, and 12 rocks, Joshua erected 12 rocks inside the Jordan under the place of the footing of the priests, carriers of the ark.
Right.
And they will be, and they were there to the same day. So there's two piles.
Okay, so if it is found, then one is a witness to the other, right?
Exactly.
Okay, very interesting. And so they do cross over, and verse 13, about 40,000 prepared for war crossed over before Jehovah for battle to the plains of Jericho.
And so the question is, does this verse refer to verse 12, where these are the battlements of the soldiers of 2.5 tribes, or this is the entire army of Israel?
What do you reckon?
That's a good question. I think it's referring to the soldiers of the 2.5 tribes, because it just carries on talking about 40,000 soldiers, but it mentions the 12 of them and doesn't say numbers. And usually when the Bible talks about soldiers and so on, it actually mentions the numbers as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I guess that makes sense, considering, you know, that there might, what are we talking about, 2-3 million people perhaps?
Yeah, so the understanding is that, you know, the Jewish understanding, and this is, I think, most religious Bible scholars would say, the numbers are really what they are. But there are people who claim, you know, for example, 600,000 foot really meant there were only 600,000 people. So it's like, 200,000 men, 200,000 women, 200,000 children or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we usually read this as being 600,000 men. Just men.
Besides the numbers, women and children. Yeah.
Yeah, but the numbers are insane. I mean, if you look at it, if you have 2-3 million people walking in the desert, for example, in the wilderness, it's going to be a pretty long. When the front of the camp reaches the destination, the back of the camp can be like a 3-4 days behind.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is how do they move from place to place? So there have been questions regarding the numbers. Are the numbers really can be realistic?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 2-3 million people traveling in the desert also probably leave a pretty decent mark in the desert. And the problem is that there are places where there's these large camps, but there's arguments. Are these camps could these camps contain millions of people or not?
Sure.
So again, this is the argument in between the archaeology and the Bible, which I can't really explain on one leg.
Mm. Well, let's jump to. Is it okay if we jump to chapter 5? Because I think we're going
to. So before we jump to chapter 5, just this very, very important. And when the priests walk out of the water, it flows back as if nothing happened.
Mm, yeah.
Usually, if you crack a dam, it breaks.
Well, yeah, but I guess
flows and pours it's everywhere.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, now that you mention it like that, if the water was piling up and piling up in a heap as it continued to flow downstream and continues to pile up, now this is the first time I've thought about this, but as they walk out, you would expect it to come crashing down, there'd be this great big watery commotion, right? But I wonder if it was like that or if it was just
calm. No, so it says in verse 18, read verse 18.
And it came to pass when the priest who bore the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord had come from the midst of the Jordan, and the soles of the priest's feet touched the dry land, that the waters of the Jordan returned to that place and overflowed all its banks as before. Huh.
So the English translation is kind of awkward. What it says, and they went, the waters went, and the waters of Jordan went back to their place, and they flowed like as if nothing, basically as everything has been done throughout all the days.
So it wasn't.
Water should show me it's about 2-3 days. So this is as if it flowed back and nothing happened.
Just a gentle return to where it was and not a violent crash of water as they came out. Wow.
Well, I think the real miracle is that it just as if nothing happened. It just flowed back as if nothing. We haven't done anything. We just walked through and, you know.
So, you know, that's
and it's this miracle has like two sides to it. The fact that they crossed and piled up, and then when they walked out, it flowed back as if nothing happened.
So Israel crossed over the Jordan on dry land, for the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan before you until you had crossed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up before you until he had crossed over. And this is the reason why, that all the peoples of the earth may know the hand of the Lord, that it is mighty, that you may know, that you may fear the Lord your God forever. And there's the reason for it. Nice.
Verse 23, it actually mentions the Dead Sea, the Red Sea.
Red Sea, yeah.
Like I parted the Red Sea. So we're having, again, Moses and Joshua being parallels.
Yep,
Moses split the ocean, Joshua split the Jordan.